It's the Musical Theater Book Club. Let's talk about a show. Welcome to Musical Theater Book Club, where we talk about our favorite musicals, our least favorite musicals, and everything in between. I'm Berkeley.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about the most hated musical, probably next to Be More Chill. Cats. I have seen Cats. Have you seen Cats? Okay.
No, I haven't seen it. Well, so I watched that recording, the recording of the early one, but I've never actually seen it out, like, live.
I think I saw Lion King first, and then we were like, this is cool, let's try something else. So then we saw Cats.
So I'm just gonna say now, watching the recording, I didn't hate it as much as I thought I would. I actually kind of liked it.
Yep, same.
And I was like, I still don't understand. I still think it's fucking insane. I still don't know what the fuck a Jellicle cat is, and I don't think anyone does. I literally typed into Google, what is a Jellicle cat? And it was like, it's from the book. And I'm like, that doesn't answer the question. What's a Jellicle cat? But I liked, I mean, when we get into the song we'll talk about, but I liked a lot more of the music than I thought I would. I legitimately would go see this when it comes around again. Like, I feel like it's one that does tour a lot.
Yeah.
I like a pretty good amount. And like, I mean, it's not one that I'm like, oh my God, I got to go see it. But like, I'm like, yeah, I'd probably go see this now that I've watched it. I'm like, this isn't as much of a dumpster fire as everyone shits on it for.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. I completely agree. I was worried because I was listening to it and I listened to the first three songs and I was like, oh my God, do I like Cats? And remember, like, I had seen this. I have no memory of when I saw it. I have slight memory. I remember that there was a guy, a super tall guy sitting in front of us, and we were mad about that. And that's all I remember. I feel like I might have blocked it out. But I feel like now it's definitely a show I would go see.
Like I said, still bonkers.
Yes.
Still no one knows what a Jellicle cat is. No. But,
you know,
I didn't watch. I know you watched the movie. I didn't watch that. I thought about it. I thought about paying the $6 to rent it. But then I also remembered I didn't hate myself. And I knew that this podcast would turn from talking about the musical to me just spending the whole time talking about how much I hate Tom Hooper and I hated everything about it. So I decided to save everyone from that.
Yeah. I saw the movie in theaters and I wanted to talk about it during this, but I feel like there's just so much. I feel like it has to be in a mini episode. Like, you will have to watch it.
Yes, I will watch it for a mini episode.
I will have to rewatch it too, because I might have had some liquid courage to go see it. We were like, me and my two friends I saw it with were like the only people in the theater, so I was singing along. I was that annoying person. But we're talking about the musical. I don't want to relive that horror. So the musical was composed by Andrew Lloyd Webber, the producer Cameron McIntosh, the big bad dude, and then he recruited director Trevor Nunn and choreographer Gillian Lynn. It tells the story of a tribe of cats called the Jellicles. And then at night, they make their Jellicle choice, deciding which cat will ascend to the Heaviside layer and come back to a new life. What a beautiful story.
So Cats is based off a T.S. Eliot book of poetry, of Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, which I was going to read for this, but just didn't make it to put it on hold at the library in time. Not that I'm sure it would have given me much insight, but it definitely would be interesting just to see, like, because that is such a weird concept of, like, I mean, we've seen a lot of adaptations, but like a book of poetry turning into a musical is definitely a choice.
I'm into it. Like, I like the idea of turning a book of poetry into it. But what I understand with T.S. Eliot, from this book for T.S. Eliot, is he specifically wrote it for his family. And that's where it sort of feels kind of weird, where it's like, yeah, he wrote this for his family and it was literally all supposed to be a joke. And now it feels like we're trying to take it seriously. And I'm like, can we not do that?
So due to the rhythmic nature of Eliot's work, there had been previous attempts for Cats at setting his poems to music. So they had tried this before, but none of those attempts had been as successful or had gone as well. The musical is unusual in its construction because along with Eliot's poems, the music and dance are the main focus of the show. So there's not really a traditional narrative, as I think we talked about previously. There's really no plot to it. It's just like introduction, 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 the end.
Yeah, it's kind of, the way it's sort of set up is you're there watching all these cats be like, hey, I'm this cat and this is what I do. This is why I'm bad boy. This is why I'm good girl. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, but we need to make a sacrifice. And okay, I might just keep adding little bits of the movie into it. They try to add a plot into the movie, and I think that's one of the reasons I absolutely hated it. It works better without a plot. Andrew Lloyd Webber began composing the songs in late 1977 as a songwriting exercise, which I think is really funny, partly because Elliott's book had been a childhood favorite and partly to see if he could write music to predetermined lyrics, which I think that's smart. That's an exercise we all do in composition. And it's cool to see that project extend. He considered using his musicalizations of Elliott's poem in the same vein for a televised concert anthology. Practical Cats, as the show was then called, was first presented as a song cycle at the 1980 Summer Cinminton Festival, which I think this show works way better as a song cycle. I mean, it essentially is, and then they add a random plot in. And I think it would work way better that way. And I think that's why the movie failed, because like I said, they try to add a plot, but it's not a plot, it's a song cycle. Anyways, okay.
Shortly after the festival, Andrew Lloyd Webber began setting unpublished poems. Oh, unpublished poems had been given to the music, which were later added. So he started picking other poems and doing the same thing to them, which were later added to the show.
He composed the overture and the Jellicle Ball, incorporating analog synthesizers into the orchestrations to try to create a unique electronic soundscape. And I meant to look this up, but he might have been one of the first people to use synthesizers in a musical, which makes sense. Which, I mean, good for him. Making leeway in music for musical theater. So Cameron McIntosh recruited Trevor Nunn, the then artistic director of the Royal Shakespeare Company, to direct Practical Cats, which I do not like.
Trevor Nunn or Practical Cats?
Practical Cats. I don't know Trevor Nunn's work besides the Cats off the top of my head. He was unusual to choose because he was considered too highbrow for musical theater, but they felt that his pedigree, director was needed, that a pedigree director was needed to ensure Valerie Ellett's approval of the project. I didn't think about this. The poetry wouldn't be in public domain, so they would have to get approval. His poetry, I think, is 100 years, and then it's in public domain, something like that. So Trevor Nunn's initially envisioned Practical Cats as a chamber piece for five actors and two pianos, which he felt would reflect Elliott's charming, slightly offbeat, mildly satiric view of the late 1930s London. I don't know if I would like a chamber piece version of Cats.
It's so different to try to imagine, like, knowing what, like, how, like, what the music sounds like and just how many, like, people are in the show. Like, it's hard to imagine just, like, a very, like, because I feel like chamber music would be, like, more, like, serious. Mm-hmm. And Cats is so silly. Yeah. So, like, it definitely would be a weird, like, it's really hard to imagine it.
I like the idea of people sort of, like, dressed up to insinuate that they're cats crawling around pianos. That's what I see. And I can't handle it, so that's how that's going.
So Nunn expanded on these concepts by creating the Jellicle Ball as an annual ritual in which the cats to be chosen to ascend to the heaven side, then giving the characters a reason to gather and sing about themselves in a musical. He added the element of rebirth in a play as the idea of cats have nine lives. And I was like, I like that.
Yeah.
I'm also a cat person, so some of the like cat-related things in this, I was like, hey. So one of the reasons Nunn agreed to direct Practical Cats was if the actress Judi Dench would be in the cast for the musical, which Andrew Lloyd Webber was happy to oblige and give her the roles. So originally she joined as the roles of Grisabella and Jenny Anydots, which I think I wrote it down later. I don't know why, but eventually she ended up hurting herself. She ended up getting injured and wasn't able, obviously, to be in the show. She was replaced by
Ellen Page?
Yeah, it's Ellen Page, because I always, every time I see her name, I think of the
Elaine Page, right, yeah.
I think it's Elaine Page, and I always think of, I always read Ellen Page.
Wait, where?
But when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's really cool, because she did end up, you know, being in the movie and being Grisabella, so I was like, that's the one point I guess I'll give the movie.
Yeah, Elaine Page, and then Jenny Anydots was Myra Sands.
That was the other thing that I thought was interesting, the fact that she had, like, dual roles at the time.
Yeah, because this feels like a show that would be very hard to play dual or like multiple roles, although I mean Grisabelle is really just like a giant coat,
and the songs are so spread apart too, because Jenny Anydots is like the second song.
Yeah, I guess that's another good point. Casting for the other roles began in November 1980, with auditions held across the UK for dancers who could also sing and act, but by December they had the cast assembled.
So meanwhile, McIntosh engaged the advertising agency to design a poster for the musical. So after much back and forth, the agency presented a minimalist poster consisting of a pair of feline eyes with dancer silhouettes in the pupils, which took me way too long to realize that. Like, I've always looked at it, but I never really realized till, not even when I was doing this, like maybe a couple weeks before that, but I was like looking at it, I was like, oh, those are dancers. Like, which is so cool. Like, it's so stupid that I never noticed, but I'm like, that's real. Okay, I'll give them that. The producers and the creative team loved the design, but felt that the title Practical Cats looked out of place with a pair of, with the paired image of the cat's eyes. So the musical title was then shortened to just Cats.
Yes. Jazz hands. Cats. The musical was scheduled to open April 30th, 1981, with previews starting on April 22nd. However, Nunn revealed to the producers that he was struggling to write the script for the musical. And I'm like, homie, come on. So even though they had no established book or score, the rehearsals began on March 9th, which, what? This seems crazy, this timeline. So they're starting, the show is supposed to open on April 30th, and they're starting rehearsals March 9th. I know that shows have like quick turnarounds like that, but this is also a new show, and I was under the impression that they, for newer shows, specifically musicals, they would go in for a while. Like they would have the whole like preview phase, and well, they had a preview phase in this, but they had like a whole writing phase of it, because we see that with so many shows, but it's not. Oh, well, this is also different because they're opening in London.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So maybe that's different. So the original music director, Chris Walker, became so frustrated with the unfinished score that he quit by lunchtime and replaced by the film conductor, Harry Rabanowitz, which cracks me up. I kind of love that. However, it did improve later that day when Andrew Lloyd Webber and McIntosh and Nunn met with Stillgone, a musician known for his ability to improvise lyrics on the spot, in the hopes that Stillgo could write an opening song for the musical. By that next evening, Stillgo had produced a draft for Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats. However, Memory was an 11 o'clock number for Grisabelle and Nunn that Nunn insisted the show needed as its emotional center. But it had no lyrics by this point. So Weber's Tim Rice was brought in to write new lyrics for the songs, but his version was rejected by Nunn for being too depressing. The lyrics for Memory were not completed by Nunn until well into the previews. And I'm like, what? Y'all, you're going into a show and have nothing ready? Like, you're not Tom and Julia. Like, get it together. Come on.
I just want to know what those original lyrics were, because, I mean, it's literally a song of, like, a cat that's about to go die and ascend into heaven. So right. I would love to know what these original too depressing lyrics were.
Okay, wait, let me see. Lost, Tim Rice's lyrics for Memory. I need to know. Streetlights and the darkness between them, like the good and the bad sides of a life almost done. Shake the memory, all my passions returning to me, none forgotten, no, not one. One life, is there only the one life that we lose in the living and in endless decline? No complaining for no one else that for no one else has seen what I've seen. One existence, only mine. Don't look back, no, don't look back, so hard to heed the warning, such temptation, but the past is past, and the night makes way for morning. Daylight, I won't care if it finds me, with no breath in my body, with no beat in my heart, for I'm certain that now I know what happiness is. I wish I'd known that from the start. Touch me, is there no one to touch me? It was easy to love me in my glamorous past, as I leave you a shadow of light I once was. May my memory sleep at last. Wow. That's fucking sad. I don't think Cats was ready for something that sad. Oh, jeez. So one thing I do love is that many of the ensemble characters were created by the original cast through the extensive improvisation sessions held during the rehearsal process, which makes sense because y'all have to create Cats. It's like a college theater workshop type thing.
Yeah, you can't just be walking around. You have to be.
You have to be a cat. You have to be Jenny Anydot. Opening night was pushed back until May 11th. But McIntosh refused to postpone the previews as he wanted to dispel the industry rumors that the production was an impending debacle. And I mean, like, they've given us no reason to assume otherwise, so.
See, this is, it's so funny. And maybe it's just because we just watched Smash not that long ago. But it just reminds me of, I can't remember, but something happened and they were going to have to, like, I think there was, like, something had happened where they were going to need to cancel the next preview, and Tom was like, no, like, we still need to go forward with this. And it just reminds me of that, too, where, like, kind of same thing. He's like, no, we're still trying to do this, guys. So the development of Cats was plagued by financial troubles, which feels so, you know, now it's obviously so popular. So he struggled to raise the $1.16 million needed to stage the musical in the West End, as major investors were skeptical of the show's premise and refused to back it, which...
Same.
Not surprised.
No.
And then Andrew Lloyd Webber personally underwrote the musical and took out a second mortgage on his house for the down payment of the theater. He later recalled that if Cats had been a commercial failure, it would have left him in financial ruin.
I guess he really trusted it.
Yeah, that's some, like, faith in yourself.
The remaining capital was eventually raised by small investments procured from 220 individuals through newspaper advertisements. After the musical became a massive hit, the rate of return for these investors was estimated to have exceeded 3,500%. Bet I'd be upset that I didn't invest in that. But also, I would not have invested in it, so.
Cats, so a little bit of, you know, going into some performance history now. So Cats is an ensemble show with a large supporting cast and no leads.
It premiered in the West End at the New London Theater on May 11th, and it played a total of 8,949 performances before closing on its 21st anniversary, May 11th, 2002. It was broadcasted live on a large outdoor screen in Covent Garden for the fans who could not acquire a ticket, which I think is so cool. I love that a lot.
And as of right now, it's the sixth longest running show on West End.
Oh, wow.
And that's then crazy. So then Cats debuted on Broadway on October 7th, 1982 at the Winter Garden Theater. Hey. With a record-breaking $6.2 million in ticket pre-sales. And it is the most expensive Broadway show ever mounted at the time, with production costs of $5.5 million, though it got back its investment in less than 10 months.
On June 19th, 1997, Cats overtook A Chorus Line to become the longest-running show in Broadway history with 6,138 performances. The musical was found to have an economic impact of $3.12 billion on New York City and had generated the most theatrical jobs of any single entity in Broadway history. And at the time, I don't think, is it still the fourth longest?
It's still, yeah, I checked. It's still the fourth longest running show.
Wow. And there's been a number of U.S. and U.K. tours, as well as a number of international stops and tours as well.
Steven Spielberg Animation Studio had originally planned to make an animated adaptation of the show in the 1990s, and it was going to be set in war-torn London during World War II, but then the studio closed, so the project was abandoned in 1997, which I think if any musical was going to be like made into an animation, I think this one would have been one that would have worked a lot better than what they did.
Yeah. I mean, what they did was basically an animation. So we're going to start talking about some artistic elements to the show. So we're going to start with the choreography. Choreography is huge and is honestly what really makes Cats important to musical theater, I would say. It's one of the most challenging shows to dance in musical theater history. It plays a major role, and the creative team really, they set out specifically to create England's first dance musical, which I think is interesting that they chose Cats. Before Cats, the industry-wide belief was that British dancers were inferior to their Broadway counterparts. And then Cats happened.
The resulting choreography in the show blends ballet, modern dance, jazz, tap, along with interspread with aerobic displays. Lynn also trained the cast to evoke the movement physically and behaviorally of actual cats. So these feline traits were incorporated into the movements and choreography to create the anthropomorphic illusion. So to make them really feel like real cats. And then I didn't know this, and I thought that was so cool, because when we talked about him in our choreography episode, we said he was someone to watch out for, and I was like, man, this man is everywhere. So the 2016 Broadway revival featured new choreography by Andy Blankenbuehler. So he introduced some more like hip-hop and cool jazz elements into it. So he still kept a lot of it the same as Lynn, but, you know, made some significant changes, especially in several solo numbers, including the Rum Tum Tugger and Mr. Mistopheles.
I don't even remember them having a revival in 2016.
I just assumed it never actually left.
Yeah, right.
Like, I thought I went to go see Beetlejuice at the Winter Garden, but I probably just saw Cats.
You did just see Cats. Cats is actually considered one of the first truly immersive theatrical productions. Instead of a conventional proscenium arch like we have in most theaters, it was quasi in the round with a central revolving stage, and I'm into that. That sounds super cool. When the show was brought to Broadway at the Winter Garden, it was given a similar $2 million makeover, and we talked about this a little bit. Its proscenium stage was converted into a thrust, and part of the roof was torn out to allow for the effects of Griswold's ascension to the Heaviside layer. I'd be into Cats if I could see it with that staging.
Yeah, I wonder how many, like, this might be a question you know, or just, like, a general, like, out question, but I just wonder how many theaters, like, actually go through renovations when shows come. Because that feels like something that you would have to have, like, some sort of, like, presence already. Like, I think if this had opened, it wouldn't have happened here, if that makes sense. Like, if it was opening right away. But whereas, like, it already probably had, like, a name for itself in London when it came over.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the same thing with Miss Saigon, too. It's not very often that they go through renovations, I don't think. I think Cameron McIntosh is the only one that is, like, they have to. Because he's a dude. Nunn also was adamant that the orchestra would be hidden backstage out of the audience's view, so they didn't break the immersion aspect of it. He wanted to add to the experience, which usually includes a lot of audience interaction, such as during the overture when the cats don flashing green eyes as they make their way through the audience in the darkened theater. That's cool. See, I'm telling you, like, I'd be down to see cats like this. I don't think it was like this when I saw it.
So some set and costume things, that's another obviously big thing, especially the costumes in the show. So the costume designer began designing the sets in November 1980, wanting a place where cats might actually be together and include maximum room for dancing. So the set of cats constructs of a junkyard filled with oversized props to give the illusion that the cats are the size of actual cats.
I love it. So they also designed the costumes, combining cat and human features based on hints given in Elliot's poem, while ensuring that they do not impede the dancers' movements. And the costumes are super cool. I'm really into them, actually.
Yeah, like, I think they do really well of actually looking like cats, which sounds so stupid. But, like it's different than the way that Lion King shows animals. That's the only other show I could think of off the top of my head that, like, is full of animals. They have, like, props and stuff that kind of, you know, add to it. Whereas, like, you know, obviously these people are just wearing their costumes and stuff, and they do really, like, well. Like, we don't want to talk completely about the movie, but just, like, in comparison. The thing I noticed, though, that was, I think, my favorite part of it, and this is going to sound so weird, and I might end up just cutting this out because it sounds so weird. I remember one of my biggest issues from what I saw of the movie, like, from the previews, was that you could still very clearly see their human bodies, and especially on the girls, and I was like, really? Like, I mean, like, you can see their silhouette and it's odd. Whereas, like, on the girls in here, you could, like, their bodies look normal. Like,
I'm wondering.
They look flat, if that makes sense. Like, yes. They look like one complete thing, which is, like, that's what a cat's body looks like.
Yeah. I'm wondering if for the musical they had to do, like, binding and tucking. Because that makes sense. Side note about the movie, do we talk about the butthole edit?
That's what I want. Please release it.
That's the version of Cats I will watch.
So the last thing about the costumes really quick is that due to the amount of dancing that they do, the costumes don't last longer than a few months. So they're constantly, and when you think about how long it's been on Broadway and it's been on West End, that is, I like almost wonder what their costume budget is, of like how much it costs to constantly replace these costumes every few months.
Yeah, literally. So Cats is a completely sung-through musical with no dialogue between the songs, although there are occasions when the music accompanies spoken verse. Andrew Lloyd Webber's composition employs an eclectic range of musical styles so as to magnify the characters' contrasting personalities. He also employs various techniques to connect the pieces. He uses a lot of reoccurring motifs and preludes and reprises. So there are a number of cast recordings, the original London cast, Broadway, Australian, Japanese, Dutch, French, Mexican, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on. So I listened to I listened to the original Broadway cast recording. Is that what you listened to?
I think that's what I saved because I just watched the recording. Yeah. I watched the recording and then the songs that I liked, I just saved on my thing. Yeah. I saved the original one.
Okay. What are your songs? What do you like?
So many more than I was expecting.
I'm scared.
The prologue, which is, you know, the Jellicle songs for Jellicle Cats. Jellicle Cats. And I just kept singing that for like, yep. Mostly to my cats. So they already hate when I sing musical theater to them because they're mean little brats. But I just would carry Katie around and sing it to her and she wanted to kill me. The Invitation to the Jellicle Ball. The Old Gumby Cat. The Rum Tum Tugger. Mm-hmm. The Jellicle Ball. Shimbleshanks the Railway Cat, McCavity the Mystery Cat, and Mr. Mistopheles. I actually don't care for Memory.
No.
It's fine, but...
Nope.
I was just like...
We literally have all the same songs.
Really?
The only one that I added, or that you added that I didn't, was the Invitation to the Jellicle Ball. But we have all the same songs.
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, so I think it's all the ones that are, like, more upbeat and...
Yeah, I mean, like Gus the Theater Cat, I love that song, but it's not something I'd want on a playlist.
So in the we'll post the video of it to watch it if you haven't seen it, because I'd really recommend if you were ever interested in watching Cats to watch it versus trying to listen to it. But whoever they had playing Gus in that video just looked so sad. Like, I think I cried more for that song than I did for like memory. Like, memory, I was like, okay, whatever, she's gonna die by.
Yeah, whatever.
Spoiler. But, like, just the person they had playing it. And I think it was because they definitely had an older actor playing it, too, and it was very clear. And I was just like... I was like, this is so depressing. I think I was trying to find who it was and, like, see if they were still alive. And I was like, I can't do this right now.
So there is a music video for Cats, or for Rum Tum Tugger. It starred the original Rum Tum Tugger, Terrence Mann, and it was rearranged and restaged for the music video. It was the first music video created to promote a Broadway show, which I think is awesome. And
that's we'll tweet that one. Yeah, that's the one where all the cats are super horny, right?
Yeah, they're all horny for Rum Tum Tugger. I mean, that's when, like, you as a musical theater child are like, wait, am I attracted to, like, is this my sexual awakening? I'm like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, I remember, because I watched this a couple days ago, too, and I was just like, what is going on?
Yep.
So reviews, what were some reviews of this? So the London audiences... The London audiences absolutely loved it. There are a couple reviews that said he thought the visuals... Oh, there's a couple reviews that said that the visuals were very overwhelming.
The Broadway reactions were very mixed. In his review for the New York Times, Frank Rich noted that the main draw of the show was that it transports the audience into a completely fantasized world that could only exist in theater, which... Love that. Cool. Awesome. He thought it was very nice visually and orally, but it lacked to tell a story. And I'm like, okay, can we get through that idea? He ended the review with, its importance lies in the wholeheartedness. It is a statement of musical theater that cannot be ignored, should prove controversial, and will never be forgotten. And I'm like, you know what? Homie has a point.
So awards and pop culture references. How did this show do?
Not great. No. So they were nominated in the 1981 Olivier Awards. They were nominated for 6 and won 2. They won Best New Musical and Outstanding Achievement of a Musical. And then they were nominated for the 1983 Tony Awards. They were nominated for 11, but won 6. Best Musical, Best Book, Best Score, Best Featured Actress, Betty Buckley, Best Direction, and Best Costumes. And then in 1984, they won the Best Cast Show Album.
Good for them.
Good for them. They needed something.
So obviously Cats... has been, whether you love it or hate it, is obviously has a huge legacy on Broadway. It is, you know, a big deal. So just some of the things that it's really helped do. So Cats established new musical theater and a global commodity, making the beginning of a new era for the industry. And so it shifted the lead from Broadway marketing towards big budget blockbusters and showed the appeal to family and tourists, which left smaller productions struggling to compete. And this was something I thought that was pretty interesting, too, is that ultimately, critics were polarized on whether Cats had changed musical theater for the better or for the worse.
Yeah.
And so William Grimms wrote that there are more than a few who might see Cats as a phenomenon and as a theatrical equivalent of the rise of megabuster Hollywood action films. For them, Cats is a soulless money machine.
Ooh. I mean, I think at this time we also have to think about it. Cats was the first mega musical. The first, like, true mega musical. I mean, without it, we wouldn't have shows like Les Mis, Phantom of the Opera, Miss Saigon, basically anything. Also, basically anything that we've had from the mid to late 90s to today, basically. It was a pioneer for its time. And, I mean, not only staging-wise, but also in stuff like marketing and stuff and how they try to get people to come for the show. It revolutionized how everything happens. And I feel like we don't acknowledge that part of Cats very often, but I feel like we should.
Yeah. Their marketing strategy really set the way for mega musicals. And so we talked about the logo already a little bit with the cat eyes. And so the cat eye logo was the first globally marketed logo in musical theater history. And then such branding has actually started going with other mega musicals. If you think of Cosette and Les Mis, or the Phantom Mass for Phantom of the Opera. So additionally, Cats was the first Broadway and West End show to capitalize on merchandising as a major revenue stream. So I know we talked about this before. I can't remember if we talked about it on, I think we did.
History of Broadway?
Previous episode, yeah.
I think so.
About what was the first show. And so it was Cats. So Cats started selling in their theater lobby, selling souvenirs ranging from toys to watches to coffee mugs, all of which had the cat eye logo. The official Cats t-shirt became the second best-selling t-shirt in the world in the 1980s, second only to the Hard Rock Cafe t-shirts. And merchandising has such became such an important source of income in the industry. Do you buy stuff when you go to shows?
Oh, yeah. I always, I feel recently like it's sort of gone down from as much as it used to be, like when we first started seeing shows.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah, but I will always usually get a souvenir program if it's a show I haven't seen before.
Nice.
That's what
I always get a magnet. That's my go-to. I'll sometimes get a program depending on which show it is and where I'm seeing it. Like if I see one in New York automatically, or like I bought like the Hamilton one, I think I have the Wicked one. And that's about it. Sometimes a shirt, depending on if they're cute enough.
Yeah, my only issue with a lot of it is that they just get so expensive. Yeah. I don't mind the souvenir program. They don't do it as much anymore, but like when we were first seeing things, if you got a souvenir program, you also got one of those mesh backpacks. They're not mesh.
Oh, but yeah. Some of them shows have been doing that again, it seems like. Yes. Not backpacks, but it'll be bags. So yes. Like I have a Come From Away one, I have a Hamilton one. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah.
Actually, as I was going through my stuff, because I mean, at this point we are recording this, I move in a week from tomorrow. As I was going through my stuff, I found my one from Legally Blonde.
Aww.
But I feel like for me, the souvenir programs are, I like getting those more because like the regular playbills I'll toss out on accident. Like, but I won't get rid of those souvenir programs.
I think my only thing is like the souvenir pro, like I see a lot of the shows on tour. And so the souvenir programs are usually the original people. And so that's my only issue is like, but these aren't the people that I saw, you know what I mean? Like,
I agree. Yeah. The one thing I do think is cool with the Wicked one when I saw it in San Francisco that I thought was very interesting is that they had all the tours. So, like, I was going through it and there were pictures of Eden Espinosa and Stephanie J. Block and Megan Hilty and Shoshana Bean. And I was like, wait, this is so cool. And Adina.
Which I'm surprised Hamilton didn't do.
Hamilton should do that.
Yeah. Like, I can understand, like, the ones that aren't. But, like, that show's so big that they could afford to do that easily. But the other thing, so beyond the mega musical, Cats also led Broadway trends for musicals aimed at families and tourists. So we talked like a week or two ago about Beauty and the Beast and how much of that really helped. But one of the things is, would we have gotten things like Disney theatrical productions and jukebox musicals without Cats? So the marketing campaigns for the families targeted family audiences at the time when the demographics were not a consideration in this industry. And when we talked about our Beauty and the Beast one, you know, we had looked back of like what shows were, you know, family oriented. And this really was like the only one else on the list.
Mm-hmm. They I remember when we were doing research for Beauty and the Beast, they mentioned that Disney was really inspired by Cats and other like mega musicals. But Cats was one on the list, which I thought was cool. So basically, if you know Cats, the one big thing you know is Memory. I feel like that's a song everybody knows. It is really the standout hit from the song, from the show. In 2002, it had been played over 2 million times on radio and television stations in the U.S., which is crazy because who wants to listen to that song? It was the most requested song at piano bar and lounges in the 1980s and was equally popular choice at weddings, concerts, and other gatherings. It's almost like it was the 80s version of Seasons of Love.
Yes. I just think it's funny is that it's a popular choice for weddings, especially wondering what the original depressing lyrics were. And even with the non-original depressing lyrics, it's literally a song about, like, I'm going to go die and live in the be reborn. Like,
literally.
Nothing is more romantic than that.
As of 2006, the song had been recorded 600 times by artists such as Barbra Streisand, Barry Manilow, Judy Collins, and Johnny Mathis in covers ranging from easy listening to techno. According to Sternfeld, it is by some estimations the most successful song ever from a musical. And I did not doubt that.
So excited for my boyfriend to propose to me so that I can have the techno version of Memory play as our first song.
I'm done.
It's okay. So is he. He's not even in here. He's rooms away and he probably just awoke and was like, never.
Like, despite moderate hits with Jesus Christ Superstar and Evita, Andrew Lloyd Webber was still relatively known to the general public before Cats, especially in the U.S. With Cats, he became a big celebrity in his own right. The New London Theater, where the original production of Cats played for 21 years, was officially renamed the Gillian Lynn Theater in 2018. This made Lynn the first non-royal woman to have a West End theater named for her.
And then, obviously, because this is such a big show, there has been tons and tons and tons of pop culture references to it, from SNL to Family Guy to Six Degrees of Separation to BoJack Horseman. Some of them are just like little one-off lines. Some of them are big things, but these are my two personal favorites that like for my first two injuries. And, like, I went back and watched them after I watched the before and after I'd watched the clips. And I was just like, these are great. So they're both full episodes. First of all, side note, if you don't watch these shows, highly recommend, because they both have a lot of musical stuff in them, and they're both very funny. So the first one is from Kimmy Schmidt, which, again, highly recommend. Tina Fey and her husband worked on it. Very good. Also has Titus. I can't think of his last name.
Burgess.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Because he goes by Titus in the show, too, but he has a different last name in the show, and I could only think of that, and I was like, I know that's not his real last name. it also has Titus Burgess in it, which is actually who is in this. So without giving him away the whole thing, essentially he wants to be on Broadway theater. So he goes to a showing of Cats dressed as a cat, and he decides to like jump on the stage. And so it doesn't show the whole episode, but there's a link to like the best part of it. And it's just, it's silly. It's fun. It's silly. And then the other one is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, also from season 4 for some reason. She does a lot of musical theater references in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and there's a lot of singing in it. Again, highly recommend watching it. It's a great show. I could go on a whole tangent about it, but she does a whole episode where just with related to Cats, and all of her songs are Cats related. It's fun. So those are my two go-to Cats references, but there's a ton and ton out there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So it is time for our ratings. I feel like this one, did you figure out something this week to rate them out of?
I can.
Okay. So my thought is, I feel like we both just have to rate them out of Jellicle Cats. Like, is there any other thing in the show?
No, sorry, go ahead.
Number of times a cat has been sacrificed to the Heaviside Layer. That's my... I like Jellicle Cats.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, okay, out of Jellicle Cats? Oh, this one's hard. I don't know. Normally, I am very... I know by this time, like, what I want to rate it. I normally don't decide what I want to rate it beforehand. Like, I want to hear what everybody else has to say, because that'll influence me a little bit.
I can go first if you want.
Go first. Go first.
For once.
Go.
So, I was also the same way. I was like, oh, I don't really know. I'm going to give it 5 Jellicle Cats.
That was higher than... or lower than I was thinking.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean... Well, because I'm trying to think of, like, what I rated past shows to in comparison, although I can't really remember. Maybe 6. I'll give it 6 Jellicle Cats. I ended up liking, like I said, it's just fucking insane still. I don't understand it. I don't know what a Jellicle Cat is. But
it would go up actually, if I knew a Jellicle Cat was.
Yeah. I would give it a 9 out of 10 if I knew what the hell a Jellicle Cat was. But no, I mean, I ended up really liking the music a lot better than I thought I would. I thought it was actually pretty good. The dancing's really fun to watch. The music was good. I actually found my future character that I would want to play.
Who?
McCavity the Mystery Cat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is the best one. If you watch nothing else, watch that song, because it is the best. But yeah, and I mean, on top of kind of back to, like we said, for Beauty and the Beast too, like that show did a lot for it, but Cats kind of also paved the way for that to even happen. So I mean, as we just talked about, it had a lot of influence on mega musicals, a lot of influence on how to market shows, a lot of influence on how to sell merchandise on shows. And it came from people who kind of weren't known before. You know, I mean, obviously, Andrew Lloyd Webber's huge now. Cameron McIntosh is huge now. But they weren't really people knew before. And they, I mean, had the faith and made something. So 6 Jellicle Cats.
I think I'm going to give it a 7. I know. First of all, I think I'm too nice with my ratings. but like I agree with everything you've said. I think it's done wonders for musical theater, and I think that's what really makes me give it a higher rating than anything. As a show itself, I think the dance is great. Honestly, the music lacks for me. Like, there were, like you said, a lot of good numbers that we liked. However, we listed maybe a third of the songs in the show. The rest of the songs are slow and not very entertaining, honestly. And Andrew Lloyd Webber, he does this in all his shows, but he has this weird thing where he'll be in the middle of a song, and then all of a sudden it'll switch to, like, a full, or, like, it'll do, like, a full train stop, essentially. Like, Jellicle Cats, where you're like, and then all of a sudden you get this choral piece, and you're like, what the fuck just happened? He does the same thing with Jenny Any Dots' song, too. I'm just like, what? But that aside as well, I feel like I have to give it the points for just paving the way for modern musical theater. That's my main thing. So I hope we convinced you to listen to watch cats. Like they have, we didn't really actually mention it, but they recorded the Broadway production.
Mm-hmm.
So they recorded the Broadway production and you can easily find that online. Watch that. If you want to watch Cats, watch that recording. Do not watch the movie. However, if you want a good laugh, watch the movie. And after you watch Cats or listen to Cats, hit us up. Let us know what you thought. Where can they hit us up at?
So you can email us at mtbcpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at mtbcpodcast. We'll tweet out the link of where we watched it and the references to the stuff we talked about, some other stuff. Or you can find us on TikTok or Instagram at mtbcpodcast. We don't necessarily talk about the show, but we just do like fun theater stuff.
Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, send to your friends, send to your family, send to Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Who is on TikTok.
Send to Sondheim. He'd probably really like this episode. And please, this week, if you find out what a Jellicle cat is, let us know.
Jellicle cats.
That's going to be the outro music this week.
Jellicle cats.
Jellicle cats. Jellicle cats. Jellicle cats.